And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the American Diabetes Association, Eastern Pennsylvania and Delaware, we have its executive director back, Kevin Kelly. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks, Laura. It's good to be here again.
It's good to see you, but you've had some news since the last time you sat down in front of me.
Well, myself, I was personally diagnosed with diabetes in November of last year. So it's kind of ironic that I work for the American Diabetes Association at the same time now I live with the disease. The difference for me now is that it's no longer an academic exercise. It's really a very personal enterprise for me now to really pitch in and work with the ADA in achieving its mission.
Well, you're not alone. How many people are we looking at any given time or in a room, actually?
Well, frankly, we look across the country and we say that there's 30.3 million people that are diagnosed with diabetes. And when we look at that, we realize that when we look locally, we're talking about 1 in 11 Americans. So when you look at a room of, 11 people in the room, one of those folks has diabetes.
Well, that's diagnosed, too.
That's diagnosed. Yeah. That's so absolutely right.
So now let's get scary here. Let's talk about that.
And the very frightening thing is there's an additional 86 million people across the country who have pre-diabetes. Which means that they're running the risk of developing the disease if they don't make some significant lifestyle changes pretty quickly. But 90% of those 86 million don't even know that they have prediabetes. So those folks who go to their doctor and are diagnosed with prediabetes can make those changes because they know what's coming, if they choose to. But when 90% of 86 million are living with prediabetes and don't do anything, that's just going to push that number up significantly to the point that we're anticipating that by 2050, which is what, 30 years from now, half the country, half of all Americans will be living with diabetes.
And the scary thing is the impact that will have on all of us.
Absolutely. The impact is multi-level. You talk about the economic impact on companies, the fact that diabetes is such an expensive disease that if somebody's living with diabetes and their healthcare costs are X, the healthcare cost of somebody living with diabetes is 2.3 times that of somebody without diabetes. So therefore, that's going to affect the bottom lines of everybody, not just the companies, but also healthcare costs in hospitals, just the expense to the individual, the expense to the families. And then when you talk about the families, the caregivers who have to take care of folks with diabetes, those sorts of issues are something that is going to make a significant change in our country.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about the cost coming up. But now let's talk first about, you mentioned pre-diabetes. So I always think there were two types of diabetes, but that kind of makes me think there are three.
Well, I almost point to the fact that there are probably four types of diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is that which folks are born with. And they can be diagnosed with that really at any point in their lives, where the difference is with somebody with diabetes, with type 1 diabetes is just a lack of insulin that's in their body. So you're born with type 1 diabetes, and we used to call that juvenile diabetes. It's referred to now as type 1. Type 2 diabetes is those who have really that inability to use insulin effectively. Frankly, that's what I was diagnosed with. And when you put folks in a room, if you have 100 people diagnosed with diabetes, 5 of those people will have type 1 and the rest of them will have type 2. Majority of them will have type 2. And then some will have gestational diabetes. Those women who are pregnant may develop gestational diabetes that then can be reversed or frankly goes away after the child is born for most women, but not all. And then the kind of the fourth type is that pre-diabetes. It's not diabetes itself, but you are about to be diagnosed if you don't make significant life changes.
Do we know why? Why some people just lose the ability to process the insulin and others do not?
Well, I'll tell my own story, frankly. And it really comes down to the things that you eat, the lifestyle you lead, and it can also be environmental impact. So it's hard to see on the radio, but I'm not a little man. So that is part of the thing. I mean, we talk about the obesity epidemic in the United States of America, and we talk about the fact that folks do live many times in a very overweight capacity. And when folks are living like that, they naturally become more sedentary. They're not making healthier lifestyle choices. They're not eating as healthily as they should. So when I was diagnosed, frankly, with pre-diabetes, I started to work on things in my own life, in terms of the way that I eat, the exercise that I did. But I also had to take a look back at my own family history. And I am, you know, the child of parents who both had type 2 diabetes. I had a maternal grandmother who had type 2 diabetes. So genetics do play a factor in that. So I really will refuse to accept that folks who are simply overweight and don't exercise are those who are destined to type 2 diabetes. But it certainly does make a big difference.
And we're seeing that type 2, though, and this is why it was so scary when you talk about by 2050, half of us will have it. When you think about the age group we're talking about, you're seeing it younger and younger.
We are. And the way that we see it anecdotally in our area here is at our camp. So we have a camp for kids with diabetes that is mostly kids with type 1 diabetes. So we bring the folks out to camp, and it gives them a great camp experience. And we'll talk about that, I think, a little bit later. But what we're starting to see are kids who are very young. And by very young, I mean in their early teens, who are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And type 2 diabetes, like I said, is triggered by that obesity, triggered by stress, triggered by a sedentary lifestyle. And when we see these younger kids diagnosed, they are very often coming from areas where there are problems getting healthy foods. Folks who are living in areas with corner stores, with prepackaged foods, fewer fresh fruits and vegetables that are available to them. And what we are trying to do is to give them access to healthier foods to make better lifestyle choices.
This is an economic disease, too. Doesn't it adversely affect the poorer than the richer? Because, well, that's what you're saying, lack of healthy food, but also lack of options for exercise and et cetera.
Well, one of the things I have heard, we do a walk every year in November here in Philadelphia, and there's a gentleman that I talk to each year who says to me at the end of the walk, hey, this is great that you do this walk because it's the one time a year I can really get a good, healthy walk in. And I tell him, this is not the opportunity just to get your walk in one time a year. You're supposed to do this. You know, we look for folks to frankly do a very energetic walk, let's say, 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And this guy tells me, he said, this is the best time I can do it because I live in an area in the city. He tells me he works two jobs. He takes public transportation to both those jobs. And when he gets off of work, it's too late in his neighborhood to walk safely. So that is an issue, you know, and we encourage folks that are in that kind of a position to join a local gym that's safe. We want them to be doing things like that. And there are enough gyms that run at a lower cost for folks who might have some economic challenges. We understand that, you know, to get that 30 minutes of energetic exercise per day.
You've mentioned genetics, too, and are populations more at risk than other populations as well?
Absolutely. You know, certainly we point to the African-American population and the Hispanic population have a greater predisposition in our area and in most areas to be diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And that's not simply related to, you know, food choices and lack of exercise. That is simply related to the genetic factors in those ethnicities.
And the same applies to Asian Americans as well.
Yes. They
a higher incidence.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking at prevention or are you looking at cure? If you are diagnosed with type 2, can you go back?
That's the hope. Absolutely. And that's my goal. My personal goal is that I will lose the weight that I need to lose to frankly put my diabetes hopefully into remission, frankly. And yes, that has absolutely happened. I've heard enough stories about that, and I've seen enough research to know that if you lose the weight that you need to lose, and we tell people upon their diagnosis with type 2 diabetes, lose approximately 7% of your body weight, exercise 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and you should be able to reverse the effects of type 2 diabetes to the point that you don't have to be on medication. But you are still managing diabetes by diet and exercise at that point. And, I mean, like I said, personally, I had that warning but from my physician, you're pre-diabetic. And I didn't listen as closely as I should have because life got in the way and you're busy doing things and all that good stuff. And then when I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, I mean, I've already lost about 20 pounds and I'm working myself back, to lose more weight, to exercise more, to eat better. And I'm using the resources that the ADA provides, not just because I work for the ADA and I think I have some inside track. I don't. What I can point to is, you know, when I'm choosing what I want to eat for dinner or lunch or breakfast, you know, for the next, 7 days, we actually have a tool to help people make those healthy lifestyle choices called Diabetes Food Hub. And the funny thing is this, it's a website that folks can go to. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. We're not asking for any donation. It's an opportunity for folks simply to make a choice in terms of what they want to eat for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. They can do that for the next, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days. You make choices that are lower on the glycemic index, but it's also basically healthy food. So whether or not you have diabetes or pre-diabetes or any connection to diabetes, anybody can use this. And the great thing about this tool is that it provides hundreds of menu options that are scalable to the number of people in your family, that also provides a shopping list for folks, so it makes it easier for you to go right to the store after you make your choices, and it provides that list so you know what to get, and it provides the not just the menu, but also the recipe of how to do it.
If you're diagnosed with cancer, you put your faith in your physician and you do what the physician is doing. Here, it falls on you to manage your own health. I mean, across the board.
Absolutely.
24 hours a day.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There is no vacation from it. If you think that, we just had a big holiday and I can eat badly that one day. Well, if you choose to eat badly that one day, you're going to pay the price the next day and the day after and the week after. So that absolutely, that the onus of diabetes management is on the individual with the disease. Certainly, they would have the assistance of their physician behind them, depending on who their physician is. Some physicians are, frankly, stronger at managing diabetes than others. Not every person diagnosed with diabetes decides to see or is even recommended to see an endocrinologist, which is the type of physician that really manages diabetes overall. Many folks with type 2 diabetes see their primary care physician, who frankly just may prescribe the medication that they would have to take when they're diagnosed with diabetes and tell them that they'll see them in 6 months or even a year, as opposed to when you see an endocrinologist who might manage it a little bit more closely. But at the end of the day, the burden of the management of the disease is on the individual with the disease.
And the ramifications, if you don't manage, are horrendous.
They are horrendous. There's connections on so many levels. When we try to take a look at the effect of diabetes and what we refer to, and everybody would, the comorbidities associated with diabetes, we certainly look at the cardiovascular system, the potential for heart attack or stroke, potential for amputations, kidney failure, or even blindness. And, as I said, I am a grandchild of somebody who had type 2 diabetes, who was also blinded due to diabetes, who also had something called neuropathy, where my grandmother was unable to feel her feet, which meant that she had the potential really to be injured and not know it, and then develop an infection. And that's another issue. The ability of the body to heal itself from cuts and bruises is diminished in somebody with diabetes.
A dear friend of mine who's been managing diabetes since he was 5 years old, so he's been at it more than 50 years, and neuropathy, eye problems. And this is someone who is meticulous in their care.
Without a doubt. And I know individuals the same way who are managing the disease since they were 4 or 5 years old. And there's one gentleman I know who's very, very young. He's 25, 26 years old, managing it for the past 20 years carefully, diligently, and is, losing sight in one of his eyes. And even I notice myself, if it's towards the end of the afternoon, one of the signs of some damage happening due to diabetes is blurriness, in vision. And honestly, I notice that sometimes very early in the morning, or for myself, more often later in the afternoon, that things are blurry for me. And I can tell you then, that to me is almost an indication that, I did not eat well this particular day.
Isn't that amazing that you learn your body that well?
That well and that quickly. And when I really keep a very close track on not just what I'm eating, but also when I monitor myself through a glucose monitor, a simple blood test that anybody can do, just a finger stick on themselves, when I manage that during the day, you know, I'll take my blood sugar at when I first wake up and then before each meal and then 2 hours after each meal just to see what the effect is. If I know that I eat well, my blood sugar stays nice and level, and that's a great thing. And I can feel that each day. If I do not eat well, you know, stresses that happen in life contribute to it. If I choose to eat poorly, I do feel that same day. Immediately, I can feel that. And folks tell me in my office that they can tell when I haven't eaten well because I appear to be very, very tired. That's how it manifests itself in me.
If you'd like more information about what we're talking about, or if you would like to find out your own risk, you can find it at diabetes.org. And there you will find information about all the programming that is offered. If you are a physician, if you are a patient, if you've been newly diagnosed, go to diabetes.org. You'll find it all right there. You're listening to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Kevin Kelly, who is the executive director of the American Diabetes Association, Eastern Pennsylvania, and Delaware. And again, for more information, diabetes.org. I just mentioned know your risk because, you know, the onus is on you to discover that you might have issues that could lead to diabetes. And that's one of the things that you do. You offer that. You work with doctors. You make sure that there is a standard of care. You set that. You're into research. But then you're also into advocacy for us because when you're diagnosed, you then have to live with diabetes. And that means dealing with jobs and dealing with something as simple as TSA or, you know, finding a place for your kid to go to camp or school safely.
Absolutely. And the work that we do in our advocacy is all geared to making sure that somebody who is diagnosed with diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, regardless of the age of the individual, is not discriminated against because of their diagnosis. Because somebody with diabetes, while it's a wildly serious disease and something that you can't just laugh off and say, oh, I expected to get this disease, so it's okay. It's not okay. But at the end of the day, the onus is on that individual to manage the disease, and they can still live very healthy, very productive lives, but they have to be included and involved. So we have programs, honestly, to teach adults that are in the schools how to help kids with diabetes so that if a kid who is in school has some crisis, that adults can be educated about what to look out for, what to do to make sure that the child gets the care that they need immediately. We do the same thing in the workplace so that folks aren't discriminated against in the workplace. And frankly, we also do it in prisons because that very often happens, that we have folks who are incarcerated but don't have access to the care that they need and are affected. And they contact us and we give them the same sort of privileges that we give to anybody diagnosed, to access to our service center, to our Center for Information, so that these folks can get the advocates that they need to be in their corner so that they are given all of the rights that everybody else has to participate in a full and healthy lifestyle.
And advocacy also includes working with insurance and working on costs, because the burden, it's like a $12.9 billion in Pennsylvania, $980 million in Delaware. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Yeah, the cost of diabetes is something that is just extraordinary. And when we look, as I said, when we look locally, you know, I look in Pennsylvania, you know, the fact that diagnosed diabetes costs about $13 billion just in Pennsylvania alone. When we look in Delaware, we're looking at $980 million in this state of Delaware for folks. And these complications are just so serious. The cost is just astronomical for the individual as well as for the general community.
And for the individual, it's getting more and more expensive.
Absolutely. And, you know, we look at things like insulin affordability. We look at those costs and we advocate in the halls of Congress. We advocate with insurance payers and we advocate with pharmaceutical companies to see how we can make the disease more manageable for the cost of it with our folks.
Well, when you think about the ramifications of not managing heart disease, kidney failure, et cetera, going on through the list, those cost far more than the cost of maintenance.
Absolutely. And one of the challenges, too, when we're looking at those comorbidities, like I said, cardiovascular disease, renal disease, nerve damage, high blood pressure. I mentioned earlier relatively to my grandmother, ulcers on the foot, skin infections, depression even, emotional distress. All of those comorbidities all stem from diabetes. So if we are able to really achieve the mission of the American Diabetes Association, which is to prevent and cure diabetes and to improve the lives of all those affected by diabetes. If we were able to really achieve that, then all of a sudden these comorbidities go away. There still may be, cardiac issues. There still will be all these other things that exist, but diabetes won't be the core issue.
And so towards that, you got to raise some money. And that means because, you got to pay for all that research, all that advocacy and all the services that you can find at diabetes.org. But the Camp for Kids down in Delaware, you need money for all of that. And you need volunteers and you need us doing things for you. So let's go into some of the fun ways that we can help.
So we do events. Certainly part of the biggest part of my job, frankly, is to do all of that, to assist with our fundraising efforts, to raise the funds that we do, so that we can have our Camp for Kids with Diabetes, so that we can be doing research in this area that will help not just this area, but also this country and, frankly, the world. So we have a Camp for Kids with Diabetes, and that camp is open to about 175 kids from the ages of 6 to 17, and we bring them out to a camp experience. The great thing for the kids is they are all kids living with diabetes, as opposed to what happens to them in the school, where they may be the only kid with diabetes and they're singled out because of that. Not in a negative way, it's just the way it is because people are a little bit more concerned for them. But here you have 175 kids with type 1 or some with type 2 diabetes in this environment where they have about 100 staff that are there to oversee them, many of whom are physicians and nurses, pharmacists in training, and other counselors who not only provide them the fun camp experience, but also give them the training they need to manage the disease on their own. And one of our goals for the camp is, frankly, to let these kids learn how to manage the disease on their own, because they're going to have to do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the rest of their young lives. So we want to provide them with those tools to do that. Other things that we do a tour, something called our Tour to Cure, which is our bike ride, a 3 to a 63 mile bike ride that takes off up in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, and a step out walk to stop diabetes on November 2nd at the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum. And those two fundraising events are our premier signature fundraising events, where we bring together about 2,000 people through those two events to raise about $800,000. And the beautiful thing, frankly, about our fundraising, when we take a look at camp and those two fundraising events, as well as some other events that we do that are smaller scale, we end up raising about $1.3 to $1.5 million per year in this market alone. And this market I refer to as Eastern Pennsylvania and Delaware. So we raise about $1.3 or so million dollars a year. Here's the beautiful thing that I really love. $2 million actually comes back into this market for research alone. That's even before we start talking about the advocacy and education pieces. So that research that's happening in the labs of some really terrific medical centers in Pennsylvania and Delaware, receive that $2 million of funding per year so that we can really bend the curve and make a difference in the lives of people with diabetes.
Well, if we want to get involved, you're looking for volunteers. Do you need volunteers?
Absolutely, because we are a volunteer-led organization. So, you know, while I might work for the ADA, I am one guy, and there's a couple others that work in our office as well. So the more volunteers that we have, the better. So we have a couple of websites. You know, if you want to be involved with us, first you, I'll mention three. You can go to simply diabetes.org/Philadelphia to get to my office, and there, you know, you can have access to our tour website, our step out website, and our camp website. And if you want to go directly, volunteer directly for tour or our step out, it's simply diabetes.org/tourdecurephilly. Or if you want to volunteer for our step out, it's diabetes.org/stepoutphilly.
And if I want to say I don't have time to volunteer, but I can take a good walk or I can ride a bicycle at least 3 miles. Teams, how do we get involved in that?
Again, if you want to be a team member, and you can participate in these events, by the way, in a virtual way. So if you think, oh, I'm going to be on vacation when this happens and I can't participate at any of our events, we allow folks to be virtual participants, meaning that, you know, they simply join a team or join as an individual participant and participate from afar. They can do a ride on their own as long as or as little as they want, and then they simply help us fundraise through their individual network of family and friends. Again, going to diabetes.org/tourdecurephilly or diabetes.org/stepoutphilly.
And it starts on June 15th in Doylestown, and you've got a bike ride and you've got walking on the same day.
The same day, actually, we have a bike ride that is a 3 mile or 35 or 63 or 12 mile ride. And folks can do any one of those four rides, or they can do a 5K run or a 5K walk. The whole idea that day is to really make it a great family day. So if mom or dad wants to do a longer bike ride, you know, the kids can come and still participate in the run or the walk or the ride, all as a family. And we offer it as a day that starts off very early in the morning. Around 7:30 a.m. is when we'll kick off the 63-mile ride. And it will go all day until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon with breakfast served in the morning, followed by lunch and a family festival on the fields of Delaware Valley University at in Doylestown. So it's going to be a great day, and we're just hoping for terrific weather.
And no matter what, you can do it virtually as well. So
sign
up for that. If we go to your website, we can find that risk. Know your risk. You'll find manuals you can to download and find out more information about how to manage your disease, et cetera. Parting words?
I would just encourage folks to live a healthy lifestyle. Check out that risk for yourself. If you think you may be at risk for developing type 2 diabetes, I would encourage you to go to our website, diabetes.org/knowyourrisk, and you can download a risk test, which will take you all of about 15 seconds to complete. And if your number hits a certain piece, go see your doctor and get that diagnosis and then do something about it. And it's really eat healthier. And what I always say is eat your colors. You know, go as many fruits and vegetables as you can possibly go. Eat a balanced a meal all the time. Exercise 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
And, of course, you have a diabetes food hub when you go to your website. So go to the website. That's the best thing I can say for you to do today. Go to diabetes.org for everything that we have discussed today. And here's where I say good health to you in the coming year. And when I see you next, I want to hear that I am no longer pre-diabetic.
I want to hear I'm no longer diabetic. I've passed pre-diabetes myself. Right.
You are not diabetic.
Absolutely.
Well, here's to that. So, again, go to diabetes.org for more information about all that we've talked about. Or you can call them 1-800-DIABETES. That's easy. 1-800-DIABETES. They are there Monday through Friday, 9 to 7. And you can actually do one of those live chat twos. So diabetes.org, the place to go. My guest today has been Kevin Kelly, Executive Director of the American Diabetes Association, Eastern Pennsylvania and Delaware. Kevin, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Laura.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.